It's Sunday morning. Time for the great outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. And boy, welcome to a frigid winter weekend in the Midwest. Meanwhile, out west, I talked 10 days ago, 2 weeks ago, about no snow. Well, there's actually even less snow. Record warm temperatures. We're sitting here in Chicago dealing with an extended cold snap. But this is a winter so far that is, if you are interested in big game and you're interested in birds in the West, which most of us in Chicago probably are not, I'm simply going to measure, they're getting a free ride. There's almost no snow. Temperatures 30 plus degrees above normal every day now for two or more weeks running. Lots of concern about what this might mean for drought conditions across Colorado and Utah. Meanwhile, the Pacific Northwest drowning. This is not a weather report show, as you know, but it goes to show that while we deal with weather locally, birds in particularly are migratory and they will move around the country to where the conditions are most favorable. Speaking of conditions being favorable, I mentioned a couple weeks ago about how airlines are really restricting the travel with dogs. And unless you can put your dog under your seat in front of you, you should see some of the dogs that are squeezed into carry-on bags. And I guess I'm guilty of one. I have a English Cocker Spaniel, which I'm going to talk about in a moment. I think the limit is 24 or 26 pounds on an airline. Well, I get him somehow into that little 24-pound bag, and he's traveled all across America with me. But it is it's something now you just simply cannot travel with dogs, even though we used to do it all the time. So with a little bit of humor in mind, I'm going to describe maybe why it actually isn't so great to travel with a dog. So this little English Cocker that I'm talking about, name is Scout, and he was a puppy, and I needed to travel with him. And he was about 9 weeks old, so he was cute as could be. And I don't know, he might have been 7 or 8 pounds, maybe. Maybe. No, he wasn't that big. Let's say he was 5 pounds. Anyway, because he's 30 pounds now. He was 9 weeks old, and he was as cute as he could be. And I have him in a little tiny carry-on, something you almost would put a cat in, because he wasn't even the size of a fully grown cat by any means. And I'm parading him through the airport on a little leash, and he's holding the leash in his mouth, and I'm at O'Hare. And I get to the gate where I'm going to fly out of, and you have to register. You have a dog, so I've registered, and everyone is cooing over this puppy. And he is, and the flight attendant who is checking us in is, when I come up to the gate, I have to check in because I have the dog, and oh, he's so cute. And so I put him in his kennel. And I think you all know what I'm about to say. I put him in this little tiny carry-on bag. And he's just been wagging his little puppy tail. He's got the big puppy belly, and he smells like puppy. And I put him in the bag, and I zip it up, and I'm literally about to board the airplane when he decides this would be a good time to have an absolute implosion. And the poor little thing is in this little crate, and in seconds, not only is he completely contaminated, but it is coming out of the little crate I'm carrying him in, a little soft crate. The flight attendant looks at me in absolute horror, as do the people around me who just moments before had been absolutely patting the dog and loving little Scout. They ran from me like I had the plague. I have Scout in this little bag, travel bag. I run to the nearest restroom, and I take him out of the bag. And, of course, the moment I take him out, I am completely myself covered in what he is. Covered in. And as you know, at airports, you can't turn the sink on and off. You have to hold your hands under the faucet for the water to come out. And there's not very much water pressure. And I am trying to hold a squirming puppy in one hand while trying to get the water underneath. And now I've put the puppy against my body, which means my body now has what he has on it. And I realize this is not going to work. Meanwhile, of course, the plane is boarding. So I run to a stall and I put him in the toilet. The only way I could get him clean was to put the little puppy in the toilet and try to rinse them off. And then the toilet automatically flushes. And I did this three or four times and I got him pretty much clean. But I myself now, of course, am not clean. And there's dog doo-doo, dysentery everywhere on me. And I have this little kennel that is completely from one end to the other messed. So I put that in the toilet too. And I flush that in the toilet and rinse the water around. And I stuff little Scout back in the kennel and I run to the plane just as they are closing the door. And the flight attendant, who had been so happy to see me, what now is 10 minutes earlier, is profoundly disturbed that I am going to get on this airplane and travel for 2 hours with this dog who is, you cannot get the aroma out. And so I tell that story because we've all, those who have dogs, first of all, we love our dogs, but when we've traveled with them, it isn't always a great experience. So I'm an advocate for being able to travel with your dogs because of the huge inconvenience of not being able to travel with your dogs. So for those of you who are laughing with me or are simply horrified at that story, that's a real dog story. And Scout now, he's no longer a little puppy, and he travels with me all the time. And fortunately, since that moment, he has not had a similar thing in his kennel, but it was absolutely hilarious. In one hand, to watch how people went from loving my puppy to running the other way. And then I'm in the bathroom trying to flush my dog in the toilet so he can get clean. So that's my dog traveling experience. He is a hunting dog, and therefore that story belongs on the Great Outdoors Show. Let me go for a moment before I go to break to something that is really incredible and has nothing to do with dogs. So it has to do with regenerative farming. And you may have heard in the last week the Department of Agriculture is making a big push to try to have regenerative farming take place. One of the things, though, that regenerative organic certified farming does is it does not use a lot of the chemicals. It still uses chemicals, but it does not use the chemicals that are used on traditional crops, which means that pests are a huge problem, a terrible problem. And in Florida, the biggest sugarcane growing region in the country, rodents are really tough on sugarcane. So the sugarcane industry has led a program to try to deal with rodents that come in and eat all the sugarcane before it can actually even almost come out of the ground. Those rodents are primarily in the form of rats. And I know I don't think anyone on this show likes rats, so I can attack them for a moment. So what they have done is they have brought in native barn owls, and they've provided the owls with nesting homes, and the owls then control the rodents. At night, the barn owls populate the sugarcane fields and depopulate the rats and mice and other rodents. And they are able, therefore, to control rodents, which would eat all the crops, without using synthetic pesticides. And it has further resulted in one of the largest concentration of barn owls in North America. So they have taken the ingenuity, the sugarcane industry, they have taken the ingenuity to find a way to work with nature to control rodents as opposed to using pesticides so that they can grow, in some cases, certified organic sugarcane. And I'm describing this because I wonder in agriculture, as we all farmers are trying to reduce the numbers of pesticides and insecticides, not only because of their legacy impacts potentially, but because of the very real costs. Is there a way for us to look at this in a more general term, that maybe there are some ways in nature to control rodents that ordinarily would be controlled through pesticides and insecticides. So for more than 15 years, the sugarcane industry in Florida has been working on this. They've got 2,000 boxes in the region, and the owls play the most vital role in pest control with a family, it's hard to believe this, a population, a family of five owls will consume over 3,000 pests in a single season. Again, most of them are rats. So so by integrating this natural method, we are able to see that sugarcane can thrive without chemicals and a balanced ecosystem. But moreover, they have absolutely reduced their input costs. So for those of you in agriculture listening across America, and I know there are many of you, maybe there's something out there happening in Florida that might be of benefit to your region. The only thing I hope is that if owls turn out to be one of the solutions, that they don't also decide they like every failing pheasant and quail and duck. They might. But anyway, in Florida, it's working. So I'll be back in just a moment with more on the Great Outdoors Show as we move into this period, heading into the holiday. We are in the holiday season, but as we move into Christmas and beyond, I will have some thoughts for you when I come back. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. And first, a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Hiking, camping, and hunting, it's all an adventure in the great outdoors, but nature can be tough. You need to be ready for anything and everything. Chevy Silverado is built to handle the toughest conditions and get you everywhere you want to go worry-free. Silverado's designed to handle the big jobs. It's built for the great outdoors. With over 13,000 pounds of towing capacity and trailering sway control, Silverado can haul the biggest loads on the roughest roads and keep you cool as a Sunday drive. With 8 available cameras and up to 14 different views, it can spot trouble before it gets to you. That's peace of mind. And when you're ready for the backcountry, Chevy Silverado 1500 ZR2 owns the off-road. You name it, we run over it. No wonder it's Motor Trend's 2023 four-wheeler pickup truck of the year. So see your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and check out a Chevy Silverado. It's freedom to explore the great outdoors.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter here on WGN Radio. And next week's show, I'll talk about some gadgets and things that are kind of cool in the great outdoors that people can use, that a lot of us can use. You often hear me talk about the feeling that maybe we have over-electronicked hunting and fishing and taking a lot of the skill out of it. But I'm not going to talk about that today. I'm going to lead up to that with next Sunday morning. But I am going to talk right now about something where researchers in Africa are mapping. There's a snaring crisis going on. And it's a snaring of animals for poachers, of course. So a new study has highlighted the widespread and actually unsustainable practice of snare hunting across Africa. And unlike selective sport hunting with firearms, snares, which are single loops or wire on the ground, they catch animals indiscriminately, and they lead to high levels of waste and extraordinary wildlife declines. Snares are permitted in the United States for trapping during trapping seasons. They cannot just be left out all year long. So researchers led by the University of California of Santa Barbara, can you imagine? Could you be further away from Africa than Santa Barbara? But University of California, Santa Barbara is leading the study, and they estimate that some 10 million snares are set annually in Africa, a lot of them for the use of poaching, and that over 100 million kilograms or over 100 million tons of wild meat is discarded each year due to the fact that they are catching unwanted species. And the snares are driven by food and income needs, and they're driven by poaching to get the ivory of animals and to catch animals whose pelts are valuable. So snaring is absolutely one of the reasons that wildlife populations are plummeting across so much of Africa. Human populations, of course, are absolutely increasing. And everything from kudu to all the gazelles, all of the animals you see on television over the years or in films, all of them are now subject to snaring. And so antelope are one of the primary animals that are collapsing, as are gazelles, because of the snaring market. It's a black market. So the idea is, first of all, they had to find out the extent of it. The extent's far beyond anyone ever thought. And then their program is to draw attention to its scale and the consequences, and how wasteful the practice can be. So you think about how the world has turned against the ivory trade. You can't import ivory from Africa, even though it's legally taken. And whether you agree with shooting an elephant or not, the point is not that. The point is we have to manage these species. And if we don't manage them, elephants will overpopulate and will overrun communities. And with the population explosion taking place across so much of Sub-Saharan and South Africa, elephants now are constantly in human conflict, so they have to be managed. And the best way to manage them is through hunting, because people pay to go hunting. But snares are now the biggest problem. And so it's something that's been used forever. It's a form of trapping that has been used all across the world for a long time. But now it's reached the point in Africa where it's way beyond anything that has ever been done. And the scale is so much bigger than people ever could have realized. In Uganda, they have confiscated over 12 million tons of leg hold traps and wire snares in the national park in 2022 alone. It's out of control. So the remedies, what are the remedies? They think that the remedy is to continue to have sport hunting in Africa be expanded, and for the illegal ivory trade to stop through anti-poaching efforts, and to try to promote the legal ivory trade. And a few weeks ago, we talked about what was happening in the Arctic with polar bears and the ban on importation of polar bears into America, even though they're legal seasons in Canada, and they have to shoot polar bears to manage the population. The polar bear population is not in decline, and they have to manage it. In Africa, if snaring continues at this kind of a rate, we are going to lose most of the game in Africa. That's what University of Santa Barbara is finding. So this is literally breaking as I'm talking. It's been totally unknown the extent. Now we appear to know the extent, and it's a question of what the world will do about it. Because if it continues at this level, and it's a relatively new discovery, if it continues at this level, we're going to see virtually an end to wildlife in Africa. Thank you for listening. I want to end on a happy note. So the happy note is next Sunday morning, I'll have lots of ideas to fill stockings with. Hope you have a great week in the great outdoors. And if you enjoy ice fishing in the Midwest, this weather's meant for you. Thanks for listening. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.